Most of us have heard this story so many times that it's almost lost its shock value. We're like, yes, yes. Mary becomes pregnant in an unexpected way, in an unexplainable way. And yes, an angel appears to Joseph in a dream to tell him that everything's okay. You know, just the usual. But in reality, this is scandal-worthy stuff. Joseph must have heard the angel and thought, wait, what now? Did I just get punked? Am I on candid camera? This can't be real. You've got to be kidding me. And think about it. You've got this boy and you've got this girl, a betrothal, pregnant, out of wedlock. And then God comes and explains it to Joseph through this dream. And God explains it to Mary through the angel Gabriel. But God doesn't tell the rest of the town. And Nazareth, it's not that big of a town. Word definitely would have spread. It seems like God isn't concerned first and foremost with what's proper or with what's acceptable. God seems to be operating outside of social norms, outside of expectations. It's almost as if God is playing by a different set of rules or different value system, ones not dependent upon comfortable societal conventions. Instead, God challenges our framework of how the world works. Because Mary and Joseph, they were engaged, betrothed, which meant that they had given public and binding vows to each other, but that they hadn't lived together yet as husband and wife. This may have meant they knew each other, may mean they didn't. But most likely Mary was a young teenager, and their families had arranged the whole thing. There was a promise, a commitment. It was basically a done deal. And Joseph, when he learns of Mary's predicament, he plans to dismiss her quietly, to set Mary aside. And we're told that he's going to do this because he's a good and a righteous man. He didn't want to expose her to public disgrace. And we trust that Joseph is a good man. He certainly could have reacted worse. In the societal conventions of the time, they would have given Joseph permission to have her publicly disgraced, kicked out of her family's home, and much worse. The only logical conclusion Joseph could have reached on his own was that Mary was pregnant by another man. In other words, that she had committed adultery, broken that betrothal vow. And proven adultery, it was punishable with death by stoning under Mosaic law. We don't know a lot about the logistics of what it means to divorce someone quietly at this time. It presumably means that Joseph intended to dissolve their union with as little fanfare as possible. He didn't want a stain on his name, and he simply intended to set Mary aside, to spare her from any further humiliation. And looking at the options in front of them, that doesn't seem like a bad one to choose. And yet, is that akin to wanting to set God aside? Man, that hits close to home. How often do we try to quietly set God aside too? Or how often do we try to set aside God's plan for our lives? We tell ourselves that we're being upstanding and honorable when what God often calls us to is messy and radical. And what's interesting is that our concept of what is upstanding and what is honorable, they're often defined by our own context, our own culture. The Pharisees, the scribes, the religious leaders of Jesus' day, they were thought to be upstanding and honorable. But that wasn't enough, because they weren't living lives faithful to God. And it's not that upstanding and honorable is a bad thing. It's just that the faithful thing to do and the faithful way to be, it sometimes runs counter to societal conventions, counter to our norms and our expectations. God calls us out of our comfort zones. God calls us to swim against the stream. God calls us to risk, to listen for God's call in our lives and to follow it, even if it goes against the values held by our society, even if others may see it as scandalous, as no doubt the people of Nazareth did when Joseph married this woman who already was pregnant. When Joseph found out about Mary's predicament, when Mary found out that there was a child on the way, they both must have thought, "Wait, what now?" They no doubt thought this was the end. But it was really the beginning. Because we must die to our plan for our lives so that we can begin to live into God's plan for our lives. Joseph has to let go of what his expectations for what his marriage to Mary would look like. And from that comes a new beginning for our story with God, Emmanuel, God in flesh, living among us. Sometimes it feels like everywhere you turn, another door is closing in front of you. Maybe, like Mary, there's a child on the way that you hadn't planned for. Or maybe you're dealing with a medical diagnosis with no probable solution. Maybe you're grieving the loss of a loved one that's left a hole that no one else can seem to fill. Doors closing all around. And they say that when the doors close, a window opens. But sometimes we look around and we can't find that window anywhere. And we like Joseph, will ask, "Wait, what now? Are you kidding me? Really? This is wrecking my life. What do I do now?" And I love the way that Shane Claiborne puts it. I love his take on things wrecking his life. If you aren't familiar with Shane Claiborne, he started a new monastic movement in recent Christian circles. And he has a passion for advocating for nonviolence and for service to those in need, to the poor. Claiborne, he's in his mid-40s, and as he looks back, this is how he tells it. "I know that there are people out there who say that my life was such a mess. I was drinking and partying and sleeping around, and then I met Jesus, and my whole life came together." "God bless those people," Claiborne responds. And then he goes on. "But for me, I had it together. Life was great. I used to be cool. I was the prom king, for heaven's sakes. And then I met Jesus, and he wrecked my life. The more I read the gospel, the more it messes me up, turning everything I believed in, turning everything I valued and hoped for upside down." That's how he put it. Jesus wrecked my life. And I guess God is still in this business of skirting conventional norms from Mary and Joseph to now. "God wrecked my life," is what he said. And this man, he remains a faithful Christian. He's not saying that God turned God's back on him or that he's going to turn his back on God. He's saying that the life that he had envisioned wasn't the life that God had in store for him. And I imagine that Mary and Joseph felt the same way. Wait, what now? God, why are you wrecking my life? Because out of these wrecked places, God makes beautiful things. Life, it throws all sorts of things our way. Growing tensions between us and one of our lifelong friends, getting laid off, watching a marriage crumble around you. Life, it throws curveballs. But if Mary and Joseph's unexpected and unexplainable pregnancy in a time of stoning tells us anything, it tells us that God works through the unexpected. That God takes closed doors and messes, and that God doesn't promise perpetual happiness. But God does promise us God's presence. And in this Advent season, these candles, they remind us that God promises that we can live in the ways of hope, peace, joy, and love. And in this Advent season, God promises us the gift of God's presence, the coming of the Son, God in flesh. Being a Christian, it's about choosing Jesus and deciding to do something incredibly daring with your life. So let us take God up on the offer. Amen.